CliffCentral.com.
Yes. All right, you made it. You made it through another weekend, and here we are on a fake Monday, which is actually a Tuesday. It's already the 3rd of May. It should be the 2nd, but you know, we get a holiday when our holidays fall on a Sunday. There's no amount of lazy that would calculate into the South African calendar, and we are the benefactors of that. Aren't we lucky? Good morning,
lucky,
everybody.
But it is the last long weekend.
It is the last long weekend. Yeah, I suppose, you know what, we must take it when we can. I mean, we say last long weekend as if we don't have more of these holidays coming our way the rest of the year. It's the last one in a row. That's what it is. So
yeah, last one in a row.
Yeah.
But it was a good April. It was good, a 4-day week.
Good
for a good while there.
So what do you think is good about the past month of April? I mean, was it the fact that we really only worked 4 days a week? There's apparently this thing going on, and this comes up every couple of years, these petitions. Like, well, let's keep the week at 4 days, and we'll make the weekend a permanent 3 days. And it's happened in some countries. I think Guinea...
Yeah, like those can do this. Yeah, these Scandinavian countries also like have like these great rules.
No, this is an African country thing. There's a country called Guinea.
For real?
Yeah, Guinea-Bissau. And I think maybe later on, JJ Cornish can confirm or deny this. He'll know better than anyone. But I think it's Guinea-Bissau, which is a tiny little West African country. I think they have a 4-day week. And I remember I spoke to him about it once before, and he was like, yeah, 4-day week. Yeah, it's a big thing there. So
I think that's the only reason to move to Guinea-Bissau. Yeah, like, well, the way the African continent looks like. African continent is not attractive.
Yeah,
I think someone called it a shithole once.
Who was that? That man who? What was that?
He's a former president.
Something like that. Yeah. Anyway.
But otherwise, how was your long weekend? Did you do any white people things this weekend, shooting?
I did all of the cool things. I was down in Cape Town for a series of parties. This is an amazing story. By the way, Lebang will be joining us in just a moment. But I flew down to Cape Town on Friday after the show, and I flew back on Sunday. Thursday, Friday, and Saturday were host to... a bunch of parties that were held by an eccentric South African billionaire and his wife. The two of them, he turned 60, she turned 40. So they decided they were going to make this celebration their 100th together. So in other words, she's been on the planet for 40 years. He's been on the planet 60 years. And they were going to celebrate their 100 together. And they invited people from all over the world. I mean, people flew in last week from far-flung parts of the globe, Sweden, Canada, New Zealand, Hong Kong, Brazil, pretty much the most, Kenya, the most amazing places all over the world. All these people flew in, and there was this big, hello, Lebang.
Morning. How are you guys?
Hi, Lebang.
Good. They had this big series of parties in Cape Town, so there were different themes. I missed out on the Thursday because I thought that's just a little bit too much. But I went in on Friday, and I did this the Friday and the Saturday, whole slew of events. And it was fascinating because you got all these impressive people from all over the world. I mean, some of these people run huge, big companies. Some of them are massive investors. Some of them are investors in companies that all of us know by name. Like really big, interesting money people, you know, from everywhere. So I was kind of rubbing shoulders with some extraordinary men and women over the weekend. I haven't done that.
The best.
Yo,
they're like, let's take over the world.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I was really blown away by how down to earth and normal and fun everybody was. Especially, I've got to say, the Swedes. Like these, there were about six or seven Swedes there, and they were unbelievably fun. Like the one guy was just, I think he was drunk from the moment I arrived until the moment I left, but partying and having the best time. And I mean, these are serious people, so it's not like he's an alcoholic. He was just having a good time and enjoying every single second. And you know, I looked at it and I thought, these people aren't having fun because they've got lots of money. They're having fun and they made money because they're having fun.
Yeah.
They're the kind of people who look at life and they say, well, this is my adventure. I'm going to live every second to the nth degree. I'm not going to waste any time. And along the way, I'm going to make money too, because that opens up my opportunity to enjoy my life more. And that's the impression. People from the ages of, I mean, Casper Lee was there. He's like South Africa's most famous YouTuber and most successful YouTuber.
I saw that. Yeah. I was like, Gareth knows Casper Lee. Damn.
Yeah. Well, I was one of the first people to interview Casper before he'd even moved to the UK and become a massive YouTube success. He was already around a million or so followers when I first interviewed him. But he's in his mid to late 20s, so he was somewhere at the young end. Yeah. But there were people who were, you know, there were 20-year-olds there, and some of them already big successful business stories. And then right through to 80-year-olds and 85 and 88-year-olds. So there was this huge range of people just all celebrating life and love and success and, you know, the world coming out of COVID and all of that stuff. It was just fun. And I genuinely didn't know what to expect when I said yes. And I'm so glad I went, because normally I would say, oh, no, I don't know about this. This doesn't, you know, because you usually look at these things and you go, what, I really want to go and just spend 2 days partying with people who I didn't really know terribly well. But I had the best time ever. It's great.
So yeah, that was what I had. Lots of fun, Gareth. Mm. I'm glad you
flew out from Lanseria.
I know.
Dude, that's like VIP status. That's when you know. Like,
I reckon. I mean,
kind of party.
It wasn't I didn't feel like a VIP, but I did feel like I was mixing with VIPs. And you know, they say if you mix with people who you consider, you know, that you think of people as either people you look up to, or people you consider the same as you, or the people you consider as maybe people who you don't look up to, you don't have much respect for. You know, like if I was hanging around with politicians the whole weekend, I mean, that would be a horrible situation. But I look at this and they always say you're the sum of your five most regular friends, or that if you walk into a room and you're the most interesting person in that room, you're in the wrong room. So if I'm around people who have, there was this one guy called Silas Chow, right? The Chinese guy from Hong Kong. He's a self-made billionaire, owns a range of fashion products, including, I think he still owns Tommy Hilfiger. I think he still owns Michael Kors. These are his brand. He owns them now. He bought them. Damn. And he started off with a little textile factory with him and his dad when he was in his, I suppose he must have been in his 20s or 30s, because he's now in his 70s. And that was in the 1970s. And this guy has the most energy you've ever seen in a person. He is just the most infectious bundle of raw enjoyment. He just loves being alive. He's never going to slow down. I wish I had as much energy as that guy in his 70s has. He's a phenomenon. And I looked at him and I thought, you know what? This is a person I would like not only to be like when I'm old, because he doesn't think he's old, but he's the kind of person I would like to spend more time with. I want to learn from people like that. That is, I mean, people talk about, like, I want a mentor, or I'd like to spend more time asking people that I care about and I'm interested in questions. He's one of those people. So you never know. If you don't go to these things, you don't say yes to invitations, you could be missing out on something really fun. That's again a lesson.
Just to like pick their brains. Like, you never know what you can learn. And it's what you're saying, guys. It's the people with the most money in the world that are just so chilled, living their best life, unproblematic. For the most part, anyway.
Lebang, you know, the other thing is that most of these people are not people who inherited money. They started off with
exactly
probably close to zero. I mean, certainly compared to where they're at, many of them. And I thought about, you know, how we always think of ourselves and go, oh, woe is me. I'll never get there. This isn't, you know, it's something for other people to experience. It's not really. I looked around the room at one point, and there were all these smiling, brilliant people with all of this
self-made,
and all of them so positive about this country. You know, we sit here and moan and like, oh, South Africa. And we do. I mean, listen, we try not to do it on this show too much, but South Africans, as we've said a million times, are really good at complaining. And then I hear from, you know, sitting next to this German man at dinner and his wife, the two of them, he now lives in London, and he runs an incredible capital investment and hedge fund business. And this guy is, this is his first time in South Africa. He just was absolutely captivated by this place. He said he can't wait to come back. He doesn't want to leave. And he said, you guys don't know what you've got here. You don't know how lucky you are. Because he'd spent a week before he'd been in Cape Town just kind of looking around. He flew into Joburg. And, you know, they did what all tourists do, went on a safari. But he said, he said your biggest asset here is people. And you don't realize that the people you have here, they smile more than people anywhere else in the world, even if they might not have trains that run on time and first world infrastructure and all that shit. He said, you've got something way more important than that going on.
I always envy those people.
Why?
Because look at South Africa. Yeah, I'd look at South Africa with like, no, not
with fresh eyes.
I can go back. Like, yeah, those people, I can look at South Africa with such beaming light. When we were talking with the guy from Outer, I kept on saying, I was blown away by he sees the underbelly of South Africa, and he's still like, oh, this country can go so up. I'm like, why? How do you see that? Because I'm like 25 and I'm negative about this country. I want to leave.
Well, your attitude's going to turn you into success or a grumpy human being, and we all go through the ups and downs. I mean, I met a man who's the first investor in Spotify. Right now, I mean, we're in the podcast business. Couldn't be a person more interesting to talk to than this guy Hans, and I Hans was having a massive party, so he wasn't really in the mood to talk about too much business. But he asked the only three or four questions of me, most insightful questions you could wish to be asked in our business. He knows what he's talking about. This guy, although he was ready to tear the roof off the place and dance away the night. And again, not a young man. I mean, maybe 20 years older than me, right? And just like knew what we were all about without ever knowing about us before. And then, you know, there were a lot of people there that I'd already met and that I've always kind of looked up to. And someone asked in the comments, is Elon there? No, he wasn't. Elon was not there. But Elon is the talk of the town because Elon is doing stuff that is brave and visionary. And I'm not just talking about, you know, since he's made all these moves in the media world, because the media world always gets outsized attention. But long before that, the guy was trying, you know, to find the best way to do online payments. And then he was doing, you know, rockets that would go into space so that we could colonize Mars. And then he was doing electric cars. And then he's doing the Boring Company, which is trying to dig tunnels under California so that they can have high-speed rail. I mean, he's not a normal person. He's not thinking about day-to-day. Petrol price is so high and all this shit. He's not thinking about that stuff, not because he's rich. He's rich because he doesn't think about that stuff.
100%. I saw like an exchange between his mother, him and his mom on Twitter over the weekend. And she was just like going on about how when he was like 13, 14, he was already like talking about putting money into that business and putting stocks into this and this and that. Wow. He was just never a normal child and he was never going to be. There's no way at the age of 13, those are the kinds of things you're thinking about. And then you're not going to become a billionaire. You're generally on that path if that's where you're already at. So it was.
I think he was his only part, Lebang, when Yaku was busy kicking him in the shower there in Pretoria.
Well, you're doing something special when the other billionaires are talking about you, and they're not Grunt saying, "Oh, this guy," you know, because there's also jealousy in every level. I mean, you know, if you and your friends are jealous of each other because one of you has, you know, a better car, or one of you has a nicer house. I mean, billionaires are jealous of each other because they have nicer companies than each other, or they're getting more attention or whatever. There's lots of reasons people can be like that. But it's, I mean, Dogozo says South Africa is a cool place to live in. It's a vibe out here. And you know what else? We're such resilient people, hey? Look at KZN. They've just had floods. Last year they had the riots. Dude. They've got lots of reasons to sit there and complain. Zandile Gumede. I mean, they've got reasons to be cross in KZN. But you know what? They don't sit there going, oh, poor us. We're going to leave because we'll have a better chance of making it in Sri Lanka or New Zealand or Brazil. They're like, we're going to make this shit happen. They won't let us in. And thank God, because then we have to make it work here. And let's make it work here.
Yeah. If we we're definitely like a solutions kind of like the, I don't know about the leadership, but the people are definitely like, let's just fix it ourselves. Let's figure it out. We don't really wallow in the problem. You know, we kind of just keep it moving, which is like a survival thing at the end of the day, which is really, really dope because South Africans are so good at that particular thing. That's what kind of sets us apart. We just keep it moving. It's like, oh, yesterday that happened. Well, today's a new day. Let's go. Because nobody's going to come and save us.
The show must go on.
It's on their chest. You know, right. The show has to go on.
Yeah.
So we do have that mentality. The show must go on mentality. Yeah.
And you know, again, these people aren't all they're not people who had a lucky break or came from the right family or had the right schooling or any of that stuff. Some of them came from situations that even those among us in South Africa who think we're poor and unfortunate came from the same kind of situation, and they've made it somehow by the sheer force of will and determination not to give in. And I see that in lots of South Africans. I see that in people who are just hustling every day, and they might not be in the millionaire or billionaire stakes yet, but they're going to get there one day, and they're going to be a lot. There's plenty for all of us. You know, the point is, if you're growing the cake and you're adding value to the world, that just means there's more for everybody.
No.
When someone else has something, that doesn't mean there's less for you. That's a small mentality. Yeah. That's like, well, there's only this much cake on the plate. But if you're growing the cake, there's no limit to how big that can get. And we don't have
What is that saying? A rising tide lifts all boats?
All boats, yeah. Type thing. That's it. You know, I saw Christo Visser, who's obviously had the last couple of years has not been good with old crooked Marcus Huerta taking Steinhoff down the toilet. And, you know, Christo Visser and a few of his companies took a massive knock. And this guy is out there smiling. He's the most dignified, sophisticated man. And he's just, you know, full of positive and optimistic things. He believes in this country. He's got businesses that we depend on, like ShopRite, you know, and he's supplying things that people need. That's why he's successful, and he's doing it at a price that's competitive. And I think we've got to celebrate these people. They are the ones who will create jobs. It's not the politicians who will. These are the guys who are making the difference. And if they give us what we need as products and services, and they can do it so well that many millions of us will use their stuff, then I think good for them. And we should be grateful that we live in a time where it's possible for any of us to do this stuff. I mean, some of these guys have made money out of internet companies that those were not possible before. Those were not things that were available. And you know, everybody was the same. Like, there were these people whose balance sheet is so big that all of us could sell everything we had and we wouldn't make a dent on the amount of money they make a day, right? By all of us, I mean everyone who's listening this morning. If we sold everything we've got, they wouldn't even notice if we put that money in their account. But they were treating everybody the same. Everyone was having a good time. We were there to celebrate this couple who are just in love. It's amazing. Like a 60-year-old, a 40-year-old, and they're just in love with each other. And doing great things every day, which is just so special. I loved it. It reminded me of what's important, and I needed that. I needed a bit of kick up the ass because we all get into a bit of a funk sometimes. Anyway, enough about that. It is a short week, and Lebang actually was the one who was going to bring up this four-day week thing because apparently you say there's a petition going around again about this?
No, I'm saying, like, if we were to start a petition, would you sign it? Because it's been proven that this thing works in some countries. This is a real thing. Mm-hmm. People only work, like, 4 days. And the nice thing is that you choose the 4 days. So it's not even, like, you know, Monday to Thursday or Tuesday to Friday. Like, you decide which 4 days you work, and then you just clock in. Make sure you've clocked in your days, and then you're good to go. I personally think, personally as Lebang Khosana, I think this is a great idea. I mean, April, if anything, April has shown that, you know, you do kind of need a break, but like when you're not on break, you just go like boom, 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 boom.
Have you got, so just to hang on before we get too excited about this, Lebang, have you got statistics that show that our GDP was not adversely affected by all of these holidays? Before we get too excited, because if we're just going by your feeling.
Numbers, schmumbers, what are those? What are like, those?
Because I have mathematical questions for you, Lebang. Do we keep the 8 hours a day? What do we do? Do we push it up to 10?
Guys, we just clock in. We do our timesheets and we just
Are we still doing 40 hours a week?
Are you? Damn, bro.
Are we still doing 40 hours a week?
I don't know.
I do 40 hours a week.
I don't know a lot of people who are.
Guys, April has been a different month because of all the public holidays. For me personally, my productivity has gone up quite a bit because I know that I've got so much time off and therefore I've got only a certain amount of time to get my work done. I feel like I've just been able to churn out more work in these, you know, less days for me personally. And I believe that there's people out there that probably feel the same way. So we'll see how the petition goes. I don't know how you guys feel about it. You guys can stay with your 5 days, but...
Oh, don't make us look like the bad people now.
I'm just putting it out there.
The selfish part of me is like, sure, I'll have a three-day weekend every week. I'd love that. Everybody thinks, oh, well, more time off. What are you going to do with that? Remember the week. The whole idea of the week and the weekend was invented during the Industrial Revolution. Because people were like, well, we can't make these people work in the factories until they die, because that's not very good in the long run for productivity. You know, these evil Industrial Revolution bosses, they were the ones who started that. And they're like, let's give them 2 days off in the week so that they can recuperate, right?
Well, luckily we don't have that time anymore. Thank God. Give it a try. I literally have switched up a lot of my work vibe in this month alone. I'm like, damn, April, okay, cool, let's try this out. I think I'm just generally that might just be my vibe if I'm lucky enough.
Well, we'll
vote LeBanc for a 4-day week.
I don't think it's a bad idea. I think Jean-Jacques Cornish just now will be able to help us, because I know Guinea-Bissau have tried this 4-day week thing and they're the only country that actually made it law for a while. And we've spoken about Guinea-Bissau, tiny little country in Africa. JJ Cornish gave us the most amazing breakdown of what's happened there over the last 50 years and kind of why they exist as this crazy little country, which is basically built along one river. And it's tiny. You hardly even see it on the map, but this is the country that's tried it. I'm not saying, Lebang, that we must dismiss this out of hand, because the 5-day week was an Industrial Revolution hangover, and maybe it's time to change that. But as Bakabantu says, there are practical implications here. If we're going to just take more time off, but not necessarily do anything better, then it's really cosmetic, and it's just to make people feel better. You know, these days,
for sure,
loads of us would rather just work less. And in fact, we already work less compared to any other time in human history. People used to wake up because they used to have to go and hunt their food. And that was a kind of work long before we had businesses and, you know, clocking in and clocking out. So I wonder if this is good or bad. I'm open to the idea. Let's see if it works. Let's see what happens with this petition.
I'm glad you are, because there's something in the air, and this, like, I'm not making this up. There's literally, ever since the world in inverted commas opened up again, there's really this sense of like, belief and like gratefulness for life. Like when you're out, you can see that people are just happy to be freaking out the house and happy to be able to engaging with one another again. And I guess within the working environment, it's like we're happy to be, you know, obviously working and stuff, but that balance, I think people are just more grateful to be able to live so free and like allowed to live in the way that they know how to best. And having more and more time off, you know, without taking away from the time that you don't have off, I think finding that balance is what's going to get us, like, you know, into the place where we need to go. I don't think hopping right back into what life was before COVID is the answer. I really think finding a balance between, okay, we did that and it's now an opportunity to hit the refresh button. So let's hit the refresh button. Give us 3-day weekends, bro.
You know what?
And then we'll work the other 4 days.
I'm sold to the lady in the pink top.
Go.
We're done.
That's it.
There we go. Look at it. By the way, I like those blue nails as well. The blue fingernails. You've got a whole thing going on here.
You've got a whole thing, Lebak. What happened to the dreadlocks?
Yes. No, I still have my dreadlocks.
Whose wedding was it? There was a suspicion when I saw your social media that it might have been something special going on in your life because you were talking about Lobola and all kinds of things.
Yeah, no, my best friend was getting married. So I definitely had to, be there and do like the whole thing, like any excuse to get dolled up.
Is that why you were rocking the traditional regalia?
Yes. There were so many weddings this weekend. So I was so happy that I went to one. And it was in Paulshof. They were like killing cows and there were like goats hanging on the trees. I was so happy. I was like, that's it, my people. Let's do this. I was so in my element. I loved it.
Killing cows.
You know what?
It was great. It was great.
You know what that's going to lead to? That whole debate that we've been over when I think it was Bulelo who said, if you're going to move into the suburbs, these are the rules. Otherwise, just stay in the townships. You remember all that shit? We're not going to go down that road.
I remember because I brought it up because I was at a funeral in Daneford where we were trying to kill a goat. And they were like, oh, my God, SPCA were up in arms. But anyway,
the logistics of trying to slaughter in the burbs.
All right. I got to go to this because people are – here's Cunning Stunt says, Gareth, you became Cape Tonian overnight. We'll wait for your brain to reset to Joburg vibes. No, I'm not Cape Tonian. Trust me. Although, believe it or not, I have to go back down there on Wednesday now. I've got a business meeting that I have to go to on Thursday. So I'm going to have to fly down again just after I've got back. And I got to say, you mentioned like flying out of Lanseria is ridiculous, didn't you, Bakabantu? But that's so much easier than OR Tambo. You park, you walk.
It's like a tuck shop. You walk into that house.
Shop, yeah, it's easy. And then you hop on the plane and it's like, oh, okay, I'm already on the plane. That didn't feel like I had to go through 7,000 different procedures. Like at OR Tambo, it feels like a long process. Here it was easy. And then you're on the plane before you know it, you're in Cape Town. It's very helpful. But no, I'm not going to turn into a Cape Townian and I'm not moving there or anything. So don't start throwing around your pedestrian assessments of how I might have changed my attitude. Don't you worry.
You never know.
Great mistress, terrible wife. I saw that on social media.
Correct. I still maintain it's true. And by the way, that led to a whole slew of Cape Townians going, oh, well, you don't understand Cape Town. I'm like, just calm down. I'm not like attacking your... Yes. You know, it's a funny thing about Cape Townians that I brought up before on the show, but... Whenever you say anything about Cape Town, they take it super personally. It's like you're talking about some part of their identity. And I'm like, it's when people attack Joburg for being, the crime hub or being dirty or being boring or like not having any geographical features. I'm like, I don't get upset about that. I don't go, oh, I'm so offended. But Cape Townians get offended if you say anything about Cape Town.
Don't upset them.
Yeah, they've got patriotism about the Cape Town, but weird, the Cape, yeah. Cape of Good Hope, guys.
It's so bizarre. Anyway, all right, so we got a lot to get to this morning, and we want to do some headlines as well, just so we don't leave you out in the cold. So a couple of the news stories that are keeping people busy. South Africa's Cyril Ramaphosa abandoned the May Day rally after booing. This shows you how, and it took the BBC to report this story, because you won't have seen it in our own local news, because they're all mostly useless. But chanting Cyril must go, people held up wage increase signs during a ceremony in a stadium in the northwest city of Rustenburg. The protesters, who worked at a local mine, have been striking for weeks. President Ramaphosa tried to address the miners' concerns, but was greeted by booing. We have heard your message and we'll be dealing with that matter, he's quoted as telling miners. He also pledged to speak to the relevant authorities to meet their demands. In a 2-minute video of the disruption, the president can be seen making repeated attempts to calm the workers down, only to be greeted with further jeering and booing. So this is some audio I've got from the news coverage that may just give you an idea of how badly it went. Those seats that weren't open, and remember, the president of the ANC... used to expect to arrive at a stadium, it was full because they would have bussed people in. It was full of supporters. Yeah. They would shut up when he was talking. They would dance when he danced. They would chant when he chanted. This is most unusual. The ANC president is not used to this. Thabo wasn't. Jacob Zuma wasn't. Madiba certainly wasn't. Poor Silili. This is what he has to put up with now.
Manta.
Manta.
Boo. Masule.
Boo.
Kakulu wena.
Boo.
Oh, people are fed up. Oh, my word.
And so, these are ANC supporters. These are, like, these
they
are,
weren't the ANC yeah, the, regalia, yeah, right? But know, they're still booing. The That's leather when you know jacket, it's over.
All of that stuff. Well,
like they went there, but pro-ANC. They're like, nah.
Well, no. These are probably the few people who turned. And by the way, the stadium was really, really, really unfilled. It was very poor attendance, but those who did attend attended to boo him, not to support him, which tells you a whole story, right? I mean, if you wanted to see the decline and fall, in the words of Edward Gibbon, of the ANC, then this is what you're witnessing right now. You're seeing these guys just becoming like a laughing stock in the places where they used to be the most popular. And I think it's interesting to be alive right now and to see this happening before our very eyes. Let's see what else goes on before the story is finished being written. So not a great weekend for Cyril and the ANC. John Steenhuisen visited the Ukraine, and South Africans are asking, what are you doing there?
What for?
I also had that question, like, John Steenhuisen lands in the Ukraine. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Some fact-checking, thing? Like,
I mean, is he going to what? I don't know. Like, I don't know. Is he going as, you know, his MP status? Is he going as John Steenhuisen just to see?
Well,
maybe it's a holiday.
I question your holiday in the Ukraine. That's a great idea, Lebang. I mean,
because what else could it possibly be?
Go to a war zone.
Like, real talk.
Oh, having a boring week in April, go to the world's most devastating war zone at the moment, and spend some time among the rubble and the people whose lives have been upended. Anyway, he says, and his people are saying, that he went there on a fact-finding mission, and he said South Africa's idea of remaining neutral in this crisis is not admirable. So obviously he's milking it for political points. You know, the ANC have supported Russia in a not so tacit way, when all of the rest of the world is saying, actually, Russia are decidedly the bad guys here. So John Steenhuisen said, I'm going to go and find out for myself. He visits and will visit various refugee camps, meet up with various government leaders. He made these statements during his visit to the Ukraine-Poland border and has met with the mayor of Lviv, who's a guy called Andreas Sadovi. He said, South Africa should not pretend the conflict had nothing to do with us. It's important that we live in a super connected world where disruptions in one part cause major ripples everywhere. So, you know, the favorable way to look at this, if you're going to give him a little bit of leeway, is to say, well, it is the most important global story at the moment. And he is a local politician in a country where we've really decided to side with maybe the opposite party to the party everyone else has decided to choose. And maybe it is interesting, and maybe he's just being a cynical politician on the other side of the argument, and he's just trying to score extra points or trying to make himself more visible. But that's what politicians do. I'm not surprised by any of this. I don't really find it that interesting. And I'm not going to suddenly, when John Steenhuisen gets back, go, ooh, tell us what really happened, John, just because you visited a few places.
Oh, John, please fill us in on your trip. What were the facts that you found?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Stuff that's happening in South Africa on your doorstep, things that really need your attention.
But let's say, because it is true, he's probably doing more than many of the people in our government are doing. These are people who are actually meant to deal with our international relations. I don't know whether Minister Naledi Pandor has been to the Ukraine.
Hey, Naledi offered to go talk to Rebelle Mia. Oh, I will defend that woman. She offered.
She offered to she offered to mediate. She had even more gumption than, obviously, you know, she thinks she's far more important. John just said, I'm going to go and look at some stuff. Naledi's like, I will sort out your problems here. You know? What a cheek.
Just put her in a room with Vlad and that's Zelensky gonna go. And
She's going to really hold her ground against Vladimir Putin. Angela Merkel couldn't do that. Let's see how she does. Anyway, so that's what's going on with the opposition party and with the ANC in those two first stories that we've got for you. Now moving a little bit further afield, Kylie Minogue and Jason Donovan are set to return to Australian soapy Neighbours. Do we care about this?
Did Barrett put this in the running order? This sounds like
It sounds like something that should have been in that 80s show. This is not something which interests most people.
But,
all right, for those people in South Africa, we know soap operas are really popular. For those people who even know what the soap opera Neighbours was or is, it is 37 years in the making, and it's coming to an end, and they're apparently going to be in the last show. So very exciting for those people who care about Neighbours in Australia. Soap opera that's 37 years old, good for you. There, I just thought I'd throw that in. We don't want to seem uncharitable, so we brought the story on. Netflix have cancelled Meghan Markle's animated series Pearl. Not surprising, Netflix has lost millions of subscribers after the last while. They are doing very badly. Share prices dropped.
A lot of businesses are tanking. Even Amazon tanked.
Correct. So they've revealed a sharp fall in subscribers, warned millions more that they are set to quit the service. They've wiped over $50 billion off the company's market value, as experts warn they face a struggle to get back on track. And one of the projects that they've cancelled is Meghan Markle's Super Woke series called Pearl, which is
What series?
Super Woke. It's going to, I mean, this was going to be about a 12-year-old girl inspired by influential women from history. It sounds like something was made up by like the UN's High Commission on Women and Children. But here it is.
Not super woke.
Oh, yes. Oh, with Meghan Markle and Harry, you don't think it would have been super woke? Are you joking? So they've canned it. Where? I'm so sad. What are we going to do without Meghan Markle's series Pearl? I mean, how am I going to make it through the year? Poor
Harry. I was in the mood for something so super woke. Now I won't get it.
No, sorry.
Woe is me.
Right.
The world is a terrible place, Levang.
So that's all we got time for in that field. And I'm kind of glad that we finish on a high note that something from Meghan Markle's been cancelled. That always makes me smile. Because really, she should have shut up and stayed a princess, and she wouldn't have had to be making crappy series for Netflix. But the girl has poor judgment, and so does her husband. So let them carry on living next door to Oprah or whatever it is they do. And we'll just carry on with our lives because we don't need to be hearing from Meghan and Harry. Yay. Viva. Viva no Meghan and Harry, viva. Let's turn our attention to something we do love to do every couple of days, every couple of weeks, and that is speak to Jean-Jacques Cornish and get into Africanalysis. This is one of our favorite things when we get to actually pay attention to the stories on our own continent. It is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, looking at what's happening on the continent of Africa. Here he is, JJ Cornish. Good morning.
Bonjour to you. Listen, I just a minute. I'm just busy with my other Twitter. Elon, yes. Kylie Minogue.
So important.
I can't seem to interest him. Anyway,
yeah.
How lovely to be with you guys. Very nice to be with you.
Can you believe that's a story? So, JJ, first things first, we did talk about Guinea-Bissau a long time ago, and they're in the news because Lebang is very big on this idea of a four-day working week. And they're the only country, I think, credited where it's due, to have been thinking about having a four-day week, and they actually implemented it for a while. Is it still the case in Guinea-Bissau?
Not that I'm aware of. It's not something I've been following. I just check whether Guinea-Bissau is still a drug refuge for the drugs coming over from South America to and whether they've had another coup, because they keep doing that.
They call it a narco state. Is that what you're?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Although they seem to have improved on that, in all fairness to them.
All right.
But it's an interesting little country, and I think they've had not a single president who's managed a full term because of disruptions. You know, I go back to Guinea-Bissau, arriving in London as a young reporter just after the Carnation Revolution, 1974. Mm-hmm. And there was PAIGC, the organization, seeking liberation for all the Portuguese colonies.
Yes.
And that's when I learned about Guinea-Bissau, and realized where it was, tiny little country in the Gulf of Guinea. Which is, of course, where the world's pirates operate. So I suppose if you do have a day off, the military and the naval forces can't really take a day off, because every bit of shipping moving up and down the Gulf of Guinea would be attacked on their days off, provided the pirates get to know that.
So, JJ, we were talking about the what some people say is the cynical thing that John Steenhuisen went over to the Ukraine, and we can debate whether or not that is important. A lot of people saying it's completely unimportant that John Steenhuisen, the leader of the opposition in South Africa, goes to visit the Ukraine. But we do know that the Ukraine and the situation there is having an effect on this continent. And maybe it's worth referring to what the United Nations Secretary General has been saying about the Ukraine situation and how it's impacting Africa.
Well, he was in Guinea, he was in Senegal seeing Macky Sall this week, and he then said that there is this, he's calling it a triple crisis: food, energy, and finance. And this has all been exacerbated by the Ukraine. And he's saying that until they can get the breadbasket, which the Ukraine and Russia in that part of Russia, and of course Belarus, the wheat, and it sells wheat to most of the world, until they can get that back, we're going to feel it. Now, I know the IMF made a statement that we would have in Africa the current year, the new figures that are just about to come out, would be 4.7% growth, much better than the 3.6% that they found.
Yeah.
And that means we will have recovered from the COVID pandemic. But then they say, but it's going to be short-lived because this issue in the Ukraine is doubling food prices and doubling fuel prices in countries like Nigeria and Kenya. And so our growth next year is going to go down to 3.5%. So it's really, really affecting us. It was very interesting, the UN Secretary General. I mean, I see what he did in Ukraine is quite interesting, going there, after Russia, and the Ukrainians were mightily pissed off about that. You should have come here first.
Yeah.
At least John Steenhuisen seems to have his priorities right. Or is he going on from here to Russia?
That would be a hell of a story. Now then watch people pay attention.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah, and then end up in jail with Navalny. But it's interesting to see that the debt relief that Guterres called for is very important. But he's saying that one of the most important things was that that we need a return to civilian rule in Mali, in Guinea-Bissau, and in Burkina Faso, the three countries that have had a coup there. So this is something that that Emmanuel Macron, the man now re-elected, first man in 20 years to be re-elected, first president to be re-elected for a second term, he's going to have to look to, because France sees itself as the leader in Africa, the European leader of African affairs, and he's going to have to work on that one. But of course, before doing that, he's going to have to work on the parliamentary elections in a month's time, and that's going to be, he's going to take a punishment there, you can bet.
JJ, what about Tunisia? We've spoken about Tunisia, and it's been tough in North Africa for the last while, no small part due to the fact that Libya is still a complete basket case. We hear now that the president, and he's going to put some kind of constitution to a referendum, which is usually a sign that things are starting to stabilize a little bit. But is Tunisia on the road to recovery, or are these people who are criticizing it even now correct that it's on its way to a one-party rule and to a destruction of democracy? I mean, is this what we expect in the wake of this call for a new constitution?
Well, you know, I wonder if that's not a feature of Tunisia. That's a beautiful little country.
So it's not a bug, it's a feature.
A tiny little country sandwiched between Libya and Algeria. You know, that would be like a village sandwiched between Boxburg and Brakpan. You know, there's going to be problems there every Saturday night. You don't want to go to sessions there. You know? But this man, I was there now twice for the elections, the two rounds of the presidential elections.
Yeah.
And I was there. I mean, I remember that my first visit to Tunisia was going there, coming out of Algeria when it was in the middle of its civil war. Now, that's a question you might want to ask me, Bucko. What did you go to Algeria for? Mm. You know, when you say, I'm going to Algeria, and the people said exactly what you said about John Tsiernes, and why?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I went to Tunisia. I've got a very special place in my heart for it. And I was rather impressed with Kais Saied. He's a very, very distant, very Spartan, academic man. We had his old students used to come, you know, be successful lawyers and that sort of thing, used to come to the university just to guest and listen in on some of his lectures. He was that sort of figure, inspirational figure. But he's very distant. And then a year ago, he dissolved parliament and everybody went, whoa. But is it a feature of Tunisia that it's so lovely that when you come to power there, you are, you know, you need to have your fingers rested, white knuckled, one for one from the levers of power. But here he is. They're saying that he's trying to become return it into a one party state. He's saying you're going to have a new constitution. Mm. The fact is, once they overthrew the previous president in 2011, or not the previous president, but they overthrew the dictator there in 2011. They brought in a new constitution. Now he's wanting to do another one, and his opponents are saying, no, 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 you're just trying to put all the power back in your hands. He's got a group of representing labor, lawyers, trade and industry, and the Human Rights League, and he said they will finish writing this new constitution within a month and we'll put it to the people in July. So let's wait and see what happens in that case. He's also taken hold of the Electoral Commission. Now, as I say, I went as an election observer, and the Electoral Commission is one of the few truly independent bodies in that country, and very impressive bunch too, but he's going to replace them. So, you know, the problem, you asked me the question, is it on the mend? I would have said so, having been through the election. But now that we've come out the other side and Kais Saied is seems to be grasping with power the way he is, I don't feel very
optimistic,
very, very relaxed about the whole place right. at all.
Okay, well, let's finish off with something close to home, Malawi. The tobacco farmers there have turned to dacha because of declining demand for tobacco. Is this good, bad, or is this just showing how the farmers have to be the first people to feel these changes and also figure out which cash crops are better for them to work on?
I'll tell you, as a child of the 60s, this confirms my belief that Malawi grows some of the best weed. yeah. On the continent, but you know, I lived in Zimbabwe, what was then Rhodesia. I'd spent a year there as a reporter on the Herald.
Yes,
and you know, I remember people coming in with their eyes lit up like this and saying, "I've got an arm," and I'd say, "Arm of what?" And it was a big, big piece like this of Malawi dacha.
Wow.
Didn't used to cost a whole lot either. But, I mean, so a lot of people have been enjoying that for a long, long time. But Malawi gets 70% of its international revenue from tobacco.
Hmm.
But the fact is that last year they made about $173 million from their tobacco. Well, that's nearly a third. It's 27% down on the previous year. The harvest was 50 million kilograms down.
Mm-hmm.
Prices are 20% down. So a lot of the farmers are saying, we can't grow this stuff. They've even reduced the number of tobacco auctions to for one hour on 3 days a week. So, you know, it's just not working. And you know, farmers being farmers, they've got to grow something they can sell. And dacha is the thing. Now, it was legalized, of course, in 2020, as it was here, for medicinal and industrial use. So that means I don't suppose you can buy a matchbox for you've got to buy an arm if it's industrial. But they do have very high license fees. You need $10,000 for a collective. And there's about 30 people in a collective. So there's a downside to it. People have got to come up with money to be able to grow it. But there's no doubt that those who seek dacha for medicinal or industrial purposes can start looking to Malawi because, you know, it is one of the poorest countries on the planet, and
yes,
it's also one of the countries beset with corruption. You know, they had President Joyce Banda, who sold a presidential jet and used to go on commercial flights, curse her, because I've been on commercial flights with Joyce Bonda, and if you had her on your plane, you would land, you'd be lucky to get off that plane within an hour of it touching down, you know, because of the security that it got. So there's a downside to that too. I never became a Joyce Bonda fan because of that. But she was put out of office because of corruption. So they've had grown-up problems there, and I hope that, you know, growing a bit of weed is going to help them.
Well, we also got a huge population of Malawians who've come to South Africa looking for work because there isn't enough for them to do in Malawi. So these are things that we have to be interested in and think about. That's one of the reasons we like having you on. Just because a country might be a couple of days drive or a couple of hours flight away doesn't mean that they don't affect us, their issues. And this is another example. So Dacha. Lots of people are saying, I don't know if Dacha is the new gold. It's very hard to distribute after harvesting. If you don't have a distribution platform, you're just going to be stuck with a lot of bud. So there's some people who speak with what sounds like experience here. Malawi.
Something experiencey there.
Yeah. We and Malawi, says Ruth, should export marijuana. It's the new gold. So there are people who are very bullish, to put it in the words of the economists, very bullish about Dacha. Well, JJ, I wish we could have seen you in the 60s with arms of marijuana. That sounds like something I think would be very entertaining. All right. Thank you so much.
Well, for distribution, Gareth, I don't think it's a problem. You give it to your local petrol pump attendants because they've been distributing it as long as I've known.
Take notes, y'all.
No. All right, listen.
Why is JJ the expert in wheat much?
This is great. He's a multi-talented, multifaceted human being. All right, JJ, thank you so much, sir. It's nice to see you.
All the very best.
There we go. Cheers, JJ Cornish here to fill us in on what's happening in Africa on this Tuesday morning. It is just before 7 o'clock. In a little while, we will spend a bit of time getting to know what Professor Christopher Paul Szabo is up to in our show, in our series, in fact, a second series that we're doing with him called Beyond Madness. He'll be joining us in about a half an hour from now, where we'll find out what he has planned and what's been going on in the new episodes of Beyond Madness. Really a great show, and whether you are just an armchair mental health person who's kind of taking an interest in this, maybe you sit there and you're completely amused and amazed by the latest developments in psychiatry and psychology, or if you're someone who's actually dealing with this stuff at the coalface, depression, anxiety, bipolar disorder, addiction, trauma, all that kind of thing, he's covering the full gamut of what's going on in mental health, and he's really, really the best placed person to do this. He speaks to some of the most interesting people all over the world in this series, and we're going to spend a bit of time with Professor Szabo in just a short while. Excited to have an opportunity on this show to talk to him. Apparently, the rand to the dollar, according to Ruth, 16.10, not great. So anyone who is thinking maybe there's time to travel or there's some money, forget it. It's not looking great at the moment. We were very happy when we were boasting around 14.50, somewhere around there. Now it's 16.10. So thanks very much. Not great. Angus says, Dacha is hemp, and the hemp plant can be used for clothing and paper manufacturing. That's quite right, Angus. That is right. It's got multiple uses. You know, for a long time, it was banned just because they were worried people would be high all the time. Like now.
That was the reason.
They were so worried that people would just be high all the time. I don't see why it's a bad idea for people to be high all the time, especially with 4-day weeks and 3-day weekends. What else are they going to do with their time, right?
Our government also apparently set out land for encouraging weed farming in South Africa. But like, there's an entire process where you have to follow, but you can't get land to be a weed farmer in South Africa. Government land.
Bagabantu, when you start a sentence with "the government is supposed to," I just wonder what you expected to happen after those words. Like, where did you think it was gonna maybe go? You know, if there's anything we know, it's that if there's a situation that needs improvement and you give it to government anywhere in the world, not just our government, our governments are particularly bad, but all governments, give it to government to do, that is the potentially worst way for it to become it's what
it's
meant.
The beginning of the end.
The greatest way to not get anything done is to start a committee.
Yes. Government committee. That's
I woke up this morning and there was no water. I haven't had water since yesterday. But I have to keep it moving.
Nice, Lebang. You know. That's really shitty. What do you... Okay, so what's the first... What's the first? What...
Wait. Is the shittiness happening with no water?
Well, that's it.
Hey, look, Gareth said that, not me.
I want to know, like, what is the first and most annoying thing? Because we've all had water shortages. You know, this reminds me a little bit of when we started off with electricity problems. And everybody was like, oh, don't worry, it'll get better. They have to sort this out. I hear about these water cuts and these water shortages everywhere. It makes me hugely nervous because... You can manage without electricity for a couple of hours. You can't manage without...
This is a whole different ballgame.
The minute you haven't had water for more than a day, things go backwards very quickly.
Because we use water for everything, right? We use it to cook. We use it to wash. We use it to so many other things. So it kind of like stresses you on that level. The first thing I do is I go to Twitter and I check the Joburg water account. And then that's why I see, oh no, burst pipe here. We're fixing it. They've been fixing this thing for days, for absolute days. So it's just pure nonsense. I'm just glad that my kids aren't here to experience this, because then I have a real problem on my hands. At least it's just like me and my partner. But it's terrible, dude. It sucks. Like now I'm like, I have to go to the office. Where am I going to wash? I have to find the nearest gym. I can't get to the office stanking. What am I going to eat? What am I going to cook for food later? Like, I'm just like, my mind is just like, if they don't fix this shit.
We'll just all sit a little bit further away from you today, just in case.
Thank you guys so much for being so understanding. I appreciate you guys.
Yeah, we'll give you a wide berth today at the office, so you have space. Just in case.
That's pretty whack, dude. Considering that, like, we just got out of, like, these, like, load shedding series of whatever. I was like, okay, cool. You know, shit's back to normal. Psych. Joburg Water says no. It's not happening today. And it's been like most of the weekend, so.
Oh, my God. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for anybody who's going through that at the moment. People in KZN haven't had water for like 2 weeks. That is absolutely horrendous. So I am thinking about those people. And I'm thinking about those people who, whether it's water, electricity, whatever else it is, these are the things that will drive you crazy. So we can be as optimistic as we like, but that's the reality that people are dealing with. So we don't want to seem like we don't know what's going on.
Here's some good news. The Cape Townians came through and they donated like
A
million liters of water to KZN.
I drove past the Cape Town International Convention Center on Sunday on my way to the airport, and I actually saw my aunt near there. We had a quick coffee and she was saying she went and dropped off like liters and liters of water. Cape Townians have come to the party. So big thank you to Cape Town for helping send some water and other supplies, very often via Gift of the Givers, to the people of KZN who've been most affected by the floods. Just shows you don't even have to live in the same neighborhood as people to be a good neighbor. And you don't have to be Jason Donovan or Kylie Minogue either.
I was going to say.
All right. Speaking of neighbors.
On that note, we'll be back in just a moment. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.